first half, second half, it's like chalk and cheese.
That can't be my best bet, but it's up there.
Yeah, it's no stupid red card, that's for sure.
We'll give you the balls so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh.
I'm not fully keeping it together.
Holding the high line with Rabbi and Red, talking the rabbits and turning heads, with questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home, thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. Mark and I are coming to you on the evening of October 22nd, 2019. The Fall Classic is upon us, and we are currently in the heat of the 2019 MLS Cup playoffs. Rabbi Mark Goodman, how are you doing? And more importantly, how are you feeling about the Pittsburgh Riverhounds this coming weekend?
They're doing good. We don't know who we're playing, but they're fun to watch. So they're doing really good. First in the USL East, for those of you who keep up with the USL, I do feel a little guilty, Matt. I kind of wonder, like, have we forced people to listen to my Riverhounds takes now that I've moved to Pittsburgh? Like, I hope people feel like they're being educated about USL and that their horizons are being expanded, as opposed to them feeling like, we got to listen to this idiot talk about his other soccer team. Like, I remember other soccer podcasts I've listened to, people going on like long-winded excursies about their favorite team in the Scottish Premiership. And it's like, dude, we do not care about your love for Kilmarnock or Partick Thistle or whatever you're loving. You know, we just want to hear about the Rapids. So for those of you who like are hitting the fast forward button on the podcast right now because you don't care, I feel you. I'm with you. I understand.
I think there's an important banter aspect to letting the listeners into what's going on in the rest of our lives, and I don't think we do it as excessively. You know, like, as much as, like, how many times do we have to hear about Stanford or Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, from Bobby Warshaw on Extra Time Radio, from Matt Doyle about him going to UConn and everything? Like, I casually mention, you know, being a Miami Hurricane on this show, I casually mentioned some of the LA sports teams that I care about. But I mean, I think we have a healthy like approach of occasionally bringing up Arsenal and Fulham respectively. And I think that's way less and way more bantery and like fun. Oh yeah, this thing exists, rather than, not Extra Time Radio. What am I thinking of? Men in Blazers with Roger Bennett constantly recounting his time of being a Chicago Bears fan in the late 80s and early 90s. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I hear that. And, you know, both Matt and I are Dodger fans because we're, you know, so that's at least fans got to dodge that bullet. Now that the Dodgers have been knocked out of their 14th playoff series in the last 35 years or whatever.
Yeah.
Sorry, not five. It's 32 years. And I know that because I was 11 years old when I went to the 1988 World Series game one. So, did you know that about me?
Yes, you've told me this story, and I jokingly refer to. I did not exist, and I was not in the. I was not. My parents were not planning for my existence at the time that that game was happening. So I could not have been. I could not have been further from ceasing, not ceasing to exist, but pre my existence. With that happening.
That's how old I am. That's how old I am. I was witnessing baseball when Matt was yet to be a baby.
Yes. So, yeah. So, fortunately, we dodged that bullet, listeners. And I guess, I don't know, Rockies fans probably don't care about the Nationals, so they're probably checked out on baseball.
What are people in Colorado watching, since they can't actually watch the Avalanche, the Nuggets, and they couldn't watch the Rapids anyways, even if they wanted to, But since it's not really on TV that much.
Well, Keystone and A-Basin opened up early, so I was at A-Basin last weekend, so I guess people are at A-Basin. I don't know. Listeners, tweet at us with what you are doing to fill out your Saturday now that the Rapids have ceased to exist and none of the other sports stuff that's going on in and around Colorado is as fun as it could be, either via the teams at the Pepsi Center not being on television, and the Denver Broncos having, I would say the O-line situation for the Broncos right now, Mark, is worse than the right back situation was for the Rapids in 2018.
Ooh, that's bad. Yeah, so they have just a rotating cast of terrible.
It's all like there's no depth, and what they have is garbage. And I don't know how much you know about throwball, Mark, but an aging Joe Flacco is not able to overcome that.
Yeah. I think I don't follow the throwball, and even I could have told you that.
Okay. So let's move on, folks, to some happier stuff involving Colorado and athletics. Mark, we got a little bit podcast chased last week. Dear listeners, one thing that often befalls a podcast that is occurring weekly and could have stuff happening throughout the week is occasionally you do a podcast anticipating some news to come in the sometime distant future, and then it comes immediately after, or, you know, within 2 hours of you posting the show for the week, and then by the time you actually get a chance to address it after it's happened, it's already a week old. But Mark, we would be remiss without mentioning that Andre Shinyashiki is the 2019 MLS Rookie of the Year, the first Rookie of the Year in Rapids history since Dylan Powers, and he won with a decent sizable chunk of the vote, at least given where we thought that the where this voting was going to go and some of the other competition. Overall, for the average votes between the player, the clubs, and the media, he got 32.58% of the vote, a sizable lead on Brendan Aaronson of the Philadelphia Union, who had 24.45% of the vote, and then Hasami Dotson of Minnesota United, who we talked about a month or so back, had 15.07%. And then to round out the full 100%, you had Frankie Amaya with just under 4 and Chase Gasper right behind him. And I don't know if that adds up close to 100, but, you know, maybe there was one random vote in there for some FC Dallas homegrown. But in any case, Shinyashiki wins Rookie of the Year, Mark. We both said that we were putting, not that we have ballots, but that he was our pick, and we explained the reasoning behind that in terms of importance and in terms of stats. And I think absolutely deserving for a guy who is in a great position going into his second year in MLS into 2020.
Yeah, I told you so portion of the podcast where the two of us get to pat ourselves on the back. Matt, I'm patting you on the back from a long way away. If you watch the video, guys, you would see Matt patting himself on the back as Matt slaps me in the forehead. Or tries to pat me on the back. We've been talking about Dre since before the draft. We were excited. It was the first time I think the Rapids had drafted a player where we were both like, this was a good move. They jumped up in the draft. We're really excited about this. And we were super excited about it. And it all worked out, I mean, better than we could have imagined. You know, for the two of us to say the Rapids did the right thing in the draft. They spent a little money. They moved up a couple picks, and then they got a guy, and then he actually turns out to be the MLS Rookie of the Year and a proven goal scorer who finished with what is it, 9 goals and 4 assists on the year?
7 goals and 3 assists, 31 appearances, and 18 starts. And Mark, he was in the Rapids were undefeated in games in which he recorded a goal or an assist. They were 6-0-3. So when Andre Shinyashiki started and when Andre Shinyashiki did something, the Rapids did something.
And he played 3 positions, realistically. He played kind of a left mid or left wing. He played as the primary center forward in a couple games, and he played as the underneath striker or the second striker in a 2-striker lineup off of either Kai Kamara or I think Jonathan Lewis in one game. So he showed himself to be versatile, which I also did not really expect, considering he basically played the exact same position his whole career for DU. So that was great to see. And I think that the question I think for him is very similar to the last Rapid who won the Rookie of the Year award, and that's Dylan Powers. Dylan Powers had an amazing first year and basically never really topped it. His sophomore year was pretty good, and that was that. He basically spent the rest of his career kind of trying to figure out like what he was supposed to be. I remember both on the podcast and with other Rapids writers on the beat talking about or pontificating in columns about where Dylan Powers was best used, you know, whether he was an ideal deep lying six, a regista, a box to box eight, kind of a different kind of number 10 than you normally see. He never really turned – they tried him at all those positions. He never really turned into any of them. They even played him on the wing, and that didn't work at all. And he never got comfortable, and he never found out what he was best at, and he never got to do. Maybe he never had the supporting cast around him, but he basically wilted. So his ceiling was his senior, his first year, and that's it. And then he regressed a little bit, or people basically, you know, closed him down. And I think that that's a concern for me with Shinichiki, especially being that he's older. He's an NCAA grad. His ceiling is probably Dom Dwyer, which is not a bad ceiling at all, or maybe Mike McGee, mm-hmm. both of whom are two former leading goal scorers in the league. His physical tools are not off the charts good, though. He is not Kyle Larin. He is not Carlos Vela. So he probably is never going to be league MVP. He is unlikely to score. He may have a 15-goal season in him, but honestly, role-playing second striker or spark off the bench guy who's going to get you 4 or 5 goals every year. And I think his floor is like Adam John, if you can remember that name, which was different kind of guy. John was a big body striker, but like I'm talking about that kind of like spark plug you bring on in the 80th minute who hopefully will get you a goal. Like that's probably where Shinichiki is likely to play out this year. I think he presents last thing, Matt, you think he presents one interesting challenge for the front office, which is this a guy you build around? Do you spend money on a striker knowing that you have a pretty decent striker in Kai Kamara and another one in Andre Shinichiki? Or do you focus on other positions and say, Dre, we're giving you the position, grow into it, you're our Dom Dwyer? It's a really, I may have mentioned this a couple weeks ago, but I think it's a really difficult challenge. It's not a bad problem to have. We have a good striker. We don't know whether we should, you know, back him up or let him have the job. You know, he offers a lot of questions, but, all that said, final thought, congratulations to Andre Shinichiki, who I don't think, was highly touted, throughout his college career, highly touted, upon joining the league, and for him to win one of the most prestigious awards the league offers, and for the Rapids to win one of the most prestigious awards the league offers is great.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Mark. You know, I want to call back on maybe two separate stories that we've shared with each other. Not sure if we said it on the podcast. You saw Shinichiki during one summer when he was with the U-20s or the U-23s, I believe. And I think the story you had is you hadn't really heard of him. Like, it was one of those weird situations where, like, all the players, like, on the bench were like, why is there a guy here covering the team? And then also, like, oh, my God, it's also reporter guy. I had that a little bit with my first interaction with Shinichiki during the whatever the League Cup for the Summit League was, and he was kind of like, wait, there's a journalist who like wants to talk to me, for example. And he was a little bit not starstruck, but like he started a little bit, he clearly hadn't had the media exposure that now, you know, if I wanted to talk to Shinichiki at the end of the game against Dallas, like it would have been no hack, like whatever, like Matt's just a dude. And so in your interactions with him, he said, yeah, like I'm going to make it to MLS. And I think maybe at the time you would have thought that was cockiness or a little bit of privation. And really, I think that was just confidence, or that was courage of his convictions, understanding what he needed to do to get there, and belief in his abilities to put in the work and ultimately get there. And then in the conversations I had with him, you know, this was right after, you know, this was in the final 3 or 4 games of his college career, asking him about his future, whether or not he had interest in Europe, interest in going back into Brazil. He said, you know, I believe in my abilities. I think that I can turn professional if I'm invited to the combine and everything. And it was about a week out from when he ultimately was invited to the combine. Then, you know, that's great. I'll go to MLS. You know, obviously I've got some connections to where if I wanted to start in Brazil, that's a possibility. You know, there's a dream to play in Europe, but I got to start somewhere and get established. And so that's the goal for 2019. I think suffice to say, getting on a team, starting over half the games, playing in all but 3 games in league play, having an impact in terms of an offensive standpoint, and having your offensive contribution have an impact on the team at the table, and then winning Rookie of the Year, that is definitely establishing yourself as a professional in 2019. I definitely share maybe your cause for pause, Mark, regarding what Shinyashiki's future is or what his ceiling is. I think at worst, I was talking with a friend who covers DC United this week, and this was after DC had been eliminated from the playoffs, and obviously Wayne Rooney's leaving for Derby County, and he's going on a free, presumably. That's the end of Lucharoe's. Luciano Acosta will also be leaving. He's out of contract, so that's going to be on a free. So kind of the question is, you know, is this just Benny Ball, the same team that was bad, missed the playoffs, that left RFK Stadium, but now they're in Audi Field? And what does that look like? And so all of this was in the context of maybe what role Paul Ariola was going to play. This was also right after the recent national team debacle against Canada. So was there was a question of what is the role and the significance for Paul Ariola going into 2020 with DC United? How does that change depending on what they do with the two open DP slots from their star players leaving? And what does that mean for his national team role? And the thing that my friend said that's relevant for Shinyashiki is if you have two solid DPs, Paul Ariola is a fantastic, is a good third scoring option. If you get, you know, Wayne Rooney, who can get you 15 goals, 7 assists, Luciano Acosta, who can be 10 and 10, if Paul Ariola is just giving you 5 and 7, that is bang for your buck for a TAM level player. If you get another player, whether that's Yamil Assad or somebody else, maybe a third attacking DP to where Paul Ariola is your fourth best option, I think that's equally fantastic. If Kai Kamara can sustain what he did in 2019, in 2020, and be the center of the offense in terms of being the center forward, the guy to take can make PKs and everything, be a threat on set pieces. If Diego Rubio can be an impact player as well. Let's say they bring in, you know, that DP number 10 that you and I have been fantasizing about marking the entire existence of this podcast, and that's somebody's 10 and 10. If Andre Shinyashiki is that fourth option or maybe even fifth along with, you know, a Sam Nicholson or a Jonathan Lewis as well, I think he's absolutely a fantastic addition. And as long as he's a domestic budget player, he's a great value. It's a win situation for him. It's a win for the team. It's a win for the player. It's a win for the coaching staff. I think the question with your point of his floor is Adam John and his ceiling is Dom Dwyer, could he get to the point where he's almost, in terms of contributions, he's a max budget player or maybe even a low TAM player, you know, in his prime? And what does that look like? And is that something that's viable for the club? Is that enough for him to say, hey, I can try looking for an offer at a lower level opportunity in Europe, a lower opportunity in Brazil if he had any desire to do that as well? I think that's the question that we're going to find out. But if he's just what we've seen from him here, and the Rapids have two or three other guys to be the man, and Shinyashiki's just picking up the scraps, then I think he's absolutely fantastic. I think what befell Dylan Powers is he was good at a few things, he wasn't great at anything, and the Rapids at that time, with how they were building the team, there wasn't anybody else around him. I think they saw Dylan Powers as a centerpiece in the midfield, and that just didn't really work out. Now, if Robin Fraser, or let's say Kai Kamara, spontaneously retires, for example, and then it's okay, you know, Diego Rubio and Andre Shinyashiki are up top, and the club doesn't bring in a DP, then I have some doubts. But if Kai is Kai in 2020, if Rubio continues to improve off of his first year really being a starter in MLS, and they bring in another DP attacker who has an impact, then Shinyashiki is going to continue to eat, and long may it continue.
Yeah. All right. I think we've covered that issue. We're all very happy about Andre Shinyashiki, and we can't wait to see more, although we're not necessarily resting on our laurels here at Holding the High Line. We think that the Colorado Rapids can build with and around Dre and get this team into the MLS playoffs, like maybe all these other teams that are already in the playoffs that we're watching or not watching.
Absolutely,
Matt.
Mark. But first of all, listeners, if you would like to commemorate your experience of watching Andre Shinyashiki in 2019 and be able to say you were on the ground floor, you were the Shinyashiki hipster when he got drafted, you were there when Snow Classico was happening, you can commemorate that with a t-shirt that Holding the High Line is selling through our campaign with Bonfire. Go to bonfire.com/holdingthehighline PIDS Bizarro Season, and you can get a shirt. We have it in unisex t-shirt, anywhere from extra small to triple XL. We have it in three colors. They call it cardinal, but it's pretty much the Rapids burgundy. There is a light gray, there is a black option, and then there is very much a Rapids sky blue on the front of it. It's got a few cool logos, soccer and Colorado and Rapids related, that say Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red 2019 Bizarro Season Survivor. And then on the back of it, it has a highlight of the things that happened to the Colorado Rapids in 2019, including hashtag Snow Classico 3, of which Andre Shinyashiki made his MLS debut, scored his first goal, and got a draw against the Portland Timbers. And then the third to last title we have on there is hashtag Andre Roy, that we can say, Mark, because we had this campaign before it started, we were Andre Roy before anybody else was. So head on over to bonfire.com/holdingthehighlinepidsbizarroseason/. We've got it up on our Twitter. I'll put it in the show notes as well. And you can get that shirt in a variety of sizes and colors available to you for $20.19. We get a nice little chunk of it. There are 12 days left on it, and we are not quite, we're just over halfway beyond our campaign goal. Anything else you want to say about the shirt, Mark?
It's a great shirt. The Prairie Dog Plague is really obviously my favorite, because you have to commemorate the fact that there was a Prairie Dog Plague in Commerce City with a t-shirt. Like, that would have been a t-shirt by itself if we wanted to, but there were so many other important things that happened. It was great.
Well said. Okay, Mark, let's get to the MLS Cup playoffs. You, of course, as you told me before we were recording, did not watch it because you had Jewish holiday requirements.
Many, many Jewish holidays. So many Jewish holidays. We're so glad. We're so glad to be through the Jewish. I watched a couple games. I watched a little bit of one or two playoff games, but I also, my kid had a game. The Riverhounds had an important game, and one of their opponents had an important game as the USL regular season wound down. And I also covered a Pitt women's soccer game in the ACC versus North Carolina State, which is another burgeoning fun thing that I do now, which is cover Pitt men's and women's soccer, which is super fun because I get to see all the best teams in the ACC. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about the MLS playoffs, Matt, which I mostly didn't watch. So you tell me, what were your impressions of the MLS playoffs?
I thought it was a fantastic first weekend for the new format and everything. You know, you only had one clean sheet. You had every single goal or every single game decided by one goal, with the exception of Toronto against DC United. And while the scoreline may not in the end have been exciting because it was 5-1, I think you can argue that was probably the most exciting 15 minutes that you had in the entire weekend, just with DC completely collapsing and a couple of really fantastic goals. But you had some back and forth games, you had some crazy weather, and you know, I'm not going to say that it would have been fun to be at the Rio T for that, you know, kind of slushy snow game that you had with Salt Lake City, or the rain and the sleet that you had in Philly, but they were absolutely fantastic games to watch. You know, maybe the only boring game you had was the first 60 minutes of Minnesota against the LA Galaxy, just because LA was trying to bunker and protect everything they had defensively, and Zlatan wasn't feeling it with the way the grass was happening. But then as soon as that goal happened, you know, it was lit in the final 30 minutes. You know, Seattle and Dallas, you know, have an absolute cracker. They go to an extra time with 120 minutes, and Jordan Morris gets a hat trick to ultimately down SC Dallas. You know, already talked about Philly and New York Red Bulls. That's probably the craziest single playoff game I've seen in terms of like a first round situation. So, you know, absolutely fantastic from a formatting standpoint, and way better than last year, where, you know, the opening weekend would just be all of the first legs, and basically the road team just goes in and bunkers, and both teams are content with a 0-0 draw, and it's okay, let's get to the second leg. This was second leg action from the first get-go, from beginning to end on all of them, and I think we've got four really, really intriguing conference semifinals. Obviously, I'm super excited for El Tráfico. I don't know if you know this, Mark, but again, the Lakers and the Clippers are playing on Thursday night. The starting ticket for that on the various secondary markets is just under $200. It's over $350 now just to get into the building for El Tráfico on a Thursday night, which is absolutely insane, especially given what the traffic situation you're going to get. You're going to get RSL and Seattle Sounders, you know, fantastic goalkeeping matchup there with Nick Raimondo possibly in his last game as a professional against Stefan Fry. That's going to be really excited. You know, Philly's kind of subtly built up, so they're kind of, you know, teams as far as like collective versus, you know, Atlanta United that are very much star driven. And, you know, I think still for my money, especially with LAFC cooling off, I actually had in my bracket New York City FC winning MLS Cup, but the one matchup that they have that's bad for them in terms of the playoff teams that are left, Mark, is Toronto FC, who they'll be playing. And if Jose Altidore and Omar Gonzalez are able to play, you'll have that game at City Field. And Toronto FC got a win against New York City FC and a draw. No other playoff team left in the bracket right now can say that they had 4 points, or, you know, none of the Western Conference teams ultimately won their games against New York City FC. So I think we're going to have another four really, really exciting matches. I think no matter what it ends up being as far as the result standpoint, unless there's a million suspensions for red cards and yellow card accumulation and injuries, we're going to have two really fantastic semis. And I think pending having to go to watch a baseball, you know, a game in a baseball stadium somewhere in the five boroughs, you know, I think we're set up for a fantastic matchup and an event for the MLS Cup final.
That is weird. And right there, they're displaced for not a baseball game, but for a football game.
Yeah,
is that right? Columbia's playing a football game or the Giants or somebody?
Columbia, Harvard on the Saturday. So I think MLS Cup's on a Sunday, if I'm not mistaken. Or it's either MLS Cup is on a Sunday and they can't physically turn around the field in that time, or it's on that exact Saturday. And I think it's Columbia versus Harvard or Columbia versus Dartmouth for some reason. And so the reason they were playing at Citi Field is because they couldn't have planned it elsewhere with a week out in the event that the Yankees had beaten the Astros and potentially would have been hosting the World Series over the course of the week as well. So basically, you know, like New York City FC are effectively NYC Wanderers for all playoff purposes. So they'll be at Citi Field for this game, TBD on the conference finals, and I would assume back at Citi Field if they end up hosting MLS Cup.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. And I definitely feel like it's Atlanta and LAFC to lose this series. Their series. They seem like they are. Not that Atlanta blew their team out of the water in the first round. A 1-0 victory is nothing to be impressed with. But, you know, those are the class teams in the leagues, in the divisions, and it feels like it's just proceeding naturally to that end. And nobody else was quite as impressive. I mean, that scoreline and the details of that Seattle-Dallas game were a bit messy,
yeah.
You know. Neither team seemed to be able to, like, do the basic things like defend, so... you kind of want to be able to do that. You know, and everybody knows the story with Seattle, which is that they lost, Marshall, mm-hmm. Chad Marshall up the middle, and it never got back on track. And for them to kind of go all the way is doubtful.
No, with Miles Robinson out and also Omar Gonzalez and then also Walker Zimmerman for LAFC, like you could make a legitimate argument that half the teams left in the playoffs right now, if they were to win MLS Cup, they're basically going to have to win every game 3-2, 4-3, or in PKs. And so that means more goals, which means more highlights. That's more exciting for fans and probably just more frustration for the goalkeepers. So maybe there's a small part of the amygdala hindbrain of Tim Howard that's glad that he's not having to deal with that, all circumstances told on that front. Okay, Mark, last question that we'll have. We kind of did this a little bit in the in previous iterations of the podcast, where either if the Rapids didn't have a game or if there was something else, we would pick a game that you're most excited about. Mark, you've got 2 hours free from the kids and the wife and cleaning and other stuff around the house and coaching Iggy, and you can fill it in with any one of these four conference semifinals. Which one of those games would you pick?
Well, I mean, you either hate watch Seattle Real Salt Lake because you hate both teams and you want them both to explode on the field, but that's hard to watch. That's really hard to watch. I really love Maxi Morales for NYCFC. I just like this tiny little dude pinging perfect little balls, so he's fun, but I don't think there's any way I'm just kind of throwing out the caveats to the obvious one, which is the El Tráfico for the playoffs derby played at LAFC. I mean, this game is going to be, the tickets are going for crazy high prices right now. And I went to LAFC this year and they get good prices for all seats for every game, like way more expensive than a Rapids game. And I didn't sit in the press box. I actually paid for a ticket and everything. So I feel like, I believe very strongly that they should move that game to the Coliseum and just sell 85,000 seats. They're not going to do that, but that is going to be a great game. I mean, the last thing to say about that game is Zlatan just absolutely rises to the occasion when he plays LAFC. There's just this hate and this bile. He knows the cameras are on him and he just overperforms from day one, you know, from the first ever. He's always been all about stomping LAFC, and it's just amazing. So 10:24, 8:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, 10:30 Eastern Time. That is the game that you do not want to miss. ESPN, big ESPN, folks. Don't miss it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think there's one game clearly and obviously to watch, Mark. And never mind, even if you were to watch this game with friends, listeners, who are not soccer people, this will be must-see drama. This will be must-see TV.
Yeah.
This, even if it's absolutely gubbed up and ugly, it will either be a fantastic telenovela that is 5 seasons syndicated, and just when you think you figured it out, boom, so-and-so's got an evil twin that's been alive this whole time, or it's going to be fantastic soccer, if not the perfect Venn diagram meshing of the two. So that's going to be fantastic. Maybe the one consolation I'll throw out there, Mark, you know, we don't know right now what the situation is. Jozy Altidore was supposedly ready for something for the first playoff game for Toronto FC and then wasn't in the 18. If Toronto, if Omar Gonzalez and Jozy Altidore are both able to start, and I'll say one of them is able to go 90 and the other is able to go 60 minutes, then I think you could see a fun game just with the weird dimensions in the situation at the baseball field in Queens, New York, between New York City FC and Toronto. But I mean, other than that, and I know, listeners, you're probably watching and hoping that RSL dies at the clink, but I mean, if you're just watching as a neutral, like, it has to be LAFC versus LA Galaxy. All right, yeah. Mark, we've got one more thing that we want to talk about before we get to part two of our Rap Kid series, where I talk with Cole Bastin, and that is one of our dear friends, Mark, in the greater Denver sports media and in the Rapid-specific media will – at the very least, there is uncertainty about her future. And listeners, that is Cilly Godwin, former sports broadcaster with NBC 9 News, announced, might have been last week or maybe it was the week before, but in any case, she will be leaving 9 News. She was kind of the one of the local channels that you had that was, in any case, doing anything on a regular basis, either from a human interest piece standpoint or regular reporting for the Colorado Rapids. And I don't want to speak or speculate, but she's alluded to a very good possibility that she, as a non-Colorado native, Mark, is possibly not even staying in Denver. So this isn't like she could go get another opportunity and then just continue the Rapids beat elsewhere. And with that and some of the uncertainty about what the Denver Post is doing, as far as their Rapids coverage in 2020, you know, there's, I've heard a couple people use this phrase. I do not use this to boost my own ego, but they referred to the Rapids media as the holy trinity of myself, Marco Cummings, and Abby Mood. Last word on soccer and holding the high line. Obviously Pro Soccer USA and Burgundy Wave respectively, that now, despite all the hubbub and everything, despite the Denver Post going out big in 2020 with, or in 2019 with you, and then things ended up changing, and then Cilly being at a couple things, that like, there's a very real possibility we're looking at going into 2020, and it's the Burgundy Wave, Pro Soccer USA, you and me on this podcast, and then the current when they record, through Voice of C38, and that's kind of the bare bottom of where we've been from a media standpoint. Nothing that happens in the team or an interest, anything from the local, you know, actually having to shell out money to sustain these staff members to do what's needed, is able to sustain itself. And I think there's legitimate questions about, is there even going to be a person at an outlet in which that is likely to happen in the near future?
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted about this last week when it happened. It's a real challenge to the Colorado Rapids to not have a major media company who is an independent media company, not Altitude, obviously, who's interested and invested in the Rapids becoming successful, or who wants to promote them as a team that are up and coming. The Denver Post just reaches a broader audience than any of the other soccer specific websites that you talked about, Matt. And that means that, if a person might be interested in soccer, it's really hard to find out about it if the Denver Post isn't really going to cover them. And then if the local news isn't going to cover it, then you've got a bigger problem. Another thing that's a related aspect to this is, experience is valuable in reporting. Right? It takes a couple years to get to the point where you know what players are a good interview, what the right question to ask is of a coach at the end of a game, what's a good day to go to training, and what exactly are you looking for at training? I mean, just going to training is not going to give you a good story. You as a writer, you as a reporter, you as a video producer have to figure out, what am I going to say? The alternative to that, you and I both know, Matt, is that a smart team or a decent team will produce PR releases or communications that spin the story for you. So I'll give you a great example. A couple years ago, U.S. Soccer was in town for a women's friendly against Japan, and they called up and sent out press releases to all the local media saying, hey, we're going to do a special media session for just Lindsay Horan and Mallory Pugh. And you'll come out and you can talk about how great it is that these two Colorado women are on the women's national team. And it worked, you know. Celie was there. I was there. Photographers were there. Reporters for the Post were there. And they wrote the article that that U.S. Soccer basically told them to write. They told them what the story was, and we took it. We want a good story. And if someone is going to give us the obvious good story, we'll be like, yeah, that's a lot easier than me trying to root around and figure out what it is. When you lose those people who know what a good soccer story looks like, when you have exposure, when you know who the interesting players are, you've got a problem, right? There are no video TV independent media. There won't be anybody at the Denver Post. I talked about on Twitter how The Athletic doesn't have a beat reporter in Colorado. That doesn't mean that they won't do some decent reporting. Sam Stachel did a good piece this year. And I think Matt Pence did one, and maybe one other writer, but like, there's nobody on the ground, and they don't really know the story, and they're not really going to do a great job. And so, I firmly believe that, more than a good team, human beings want to experience a good story from other human beings. They want to be drawn in. They want something compelling, something uplifting, something, man bites dog. Like, they want something surprising. And if there's nobody who knows what the story is or who the good storytellers are, then it won't be told. And it's worrisome. And it means that your job, Matt, unfortunately, becomes more important because you're the only purveyor of news, and you're the only guy who shows up to practice and training and games every week. But to be tough on you, not you, but on the media situation, like, you don't want to be in that situation as a reporter. You don't want to be the only game in town. You don't want to be the guy who does the reporting because nobody else will do it. You want to be part of a team of folks who are going to provide interesting stories, and you want people to use the Denver Post as a gateway drug to the harder core drugs of soccer podcasts and soccer websites.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Mark. You know, this is something that we've talked about that's been troubling, that is still something for the club to figure out, and I'd say still for American soccer largely to figure out. And I think the issue that the Rapids have had, I was listening to Dak Shepard's podcast, Armchair Experts, and I can't remember the name of the guest that he had. I'll retweet this out after the show comes out tomorrow on Wednesday of this week. It was some writer who does beat writing, but then also, like, has media involvement because he usually has actors or people in Hollywood in the show, and they go to some really dark places in terms of just understanding, like, the psychosis behind people. And this particular guest was talking about some issues that she had with substance abuse, but then kind of her approach of, like, getting out of that through her beat writing. And she said, like, the best advice that I ever got was from somebody who was covering some niche financial stuff that ended up becoming really, really important in the aftermath of the financial crisis when the housing bubble burst. And the advice that she got really early as an intern at the New York Times was, find a beat that has some relevance, get really good at it, and then people will come to you for that. And maybe we haven't gotten the opportunities that feel that we deserve on this, Mark. Obviously, we're creating this podcast, you know, as a platform for us to be able to do that. But I mean, pretty regularly, I know there's been times we've both gotten this, but I mean, anytime anybody in the soccer media wants to know what's going on with the Rapids, at least it will cross their mind to talk to one of you or me or other people as well. You know, you saw there was that huge blast out afterwards from the guy who writes for The Athletic on the UK side, who was wondering what happens, you know, in the aftermath of the friendly against Arsenal, and then the letter that came out, the We Care Do You, and wanting to know about just the Rapids or a stateside perspective on the state of KSE and the teams that they have and whether or not that's relevant to what's going on in Arsenal. So we are still existing in that ecosystem. We can still be the purveyors of knowledge or give information to the other storytellers for context and everything, but largely one of the issues for the Rapids in MLS 3.0, both when it comes to the checkbook, when it comes to in their own market, when it comes to in the greater part of the league, is they've been, you know, I don't know that there's another team in all of MLS, you know, I think especially now with Columbus Crew getting a new stadium and saving themselves, Chicago Fire moving downtown, and DC United getting their new stadium, that there is another team that, you know, we'll say since 2015 has been more irrelevant in their own market from a sports standpoint and more irrelevant in just a general MLS standpoint or even just soccer as a whole, other than, you know, I guess, you know, Everton fans wanting to know what's going on with Tim Howard. You know, the joke that I make is you've got the Seattle Sounders fan who's taking his coffee break after lunch and just scrolling through Twitter. What would he have to see with the hashtag Rapids96 for him to spit out his Starbucks and take notice? Because anything's going on with Diego Valeri or any signing with Portland Timbers, he's going to care. Everybody else is going to care. Anything with the New York teams is going to be relevant. The expansion teams, anybody who's making the playoff, who's really challenging. And, you know, save for the 2016 season that largely was an outlier in overperformance of that team and the big news, mainly the Acosta trade, and then the two head coaching decisions, and then, you know, the little bit that the Rapids had almost making the playoffs as well. The Rapids have largely been irrelevant in this half decade. I think you could make a legitimate argument that they've been, maybe slightly pay attention to them in the better part of this decade since winning MLS Cup in 2010. And, you know, I think the fact that nobody from a local media standpoint, at least at the higher executive level, sees any importance in covering them, I think indicates that at least if the local media, if the local big players who are the purveyors of just generally what's happening on in Denver aren't even covering the team, I think that is one metric that shows significantly where this team is in terms of just their relevance in Denver and the greater part of Colorado. And yes, that makes my job, Marco Cummings' job, and Abby Mood's job a little bit more important in terms of actually telling those stories, but largely it's just indicative that maybe we're going there and talking about something that there's a handful of people who really, really love it and a whole bunch of other people that don't really care. And that's sad for a state of a club that I think has aspirations and might be able to do something at least relevant in 2020. And, you know, I guess with that, you know, if nothing else, like, that's problematic in terms of NBC 9 News was covering that in a little bit and what that means from an uncertainty from a job, you know, and, you know, Manzo's hierarchy of needs for Sealy, someone who we both respect, you know, who's, I think, well knowledgeable about soccer and deserves to have opportunities given what she's been able to bring professionally, is sad on all fronts.
Yep, I can't agree more. I hope that the, you know, it is, the last thing I'll say is this, it is pessimistic to assume that this is the trend, that it's going to go down and down and down, or it's a pessimistic to assume that just because a reporter has left the market doesn't mean that another reporter will enter the market or another outlet will take a stab at it. DNVR.com did not decide to put anybody on the Rapids beat, but that doesn't mean they won't in the future. So you never know.
Alrighty, listeners, let us get to our interview. This is episode 2 of our 3-part series, the Rap Kids interviewing the young teenage homegrowns. In this episode, I speak with Cole Bassett. This interview happened back in, it must might have been late June, late July, or early August. We talk about Cole's soccer journey, growing up and discovering the game in Evergreen, his development that ultimately led him to joining the Rapids Academy, how that's progressed. One funny story with Tim Howard, so stay tuned for that. And then, of course, shouldering some of the expectations, giving the branding and the expectations around the club with him as kind of the face of the new homegrown movement with the Rapids Academy system. So Cole's one of my favorite people to talk to on the team. He's really philosophical and is willing to go down some of those nerdy rabbit holes with me. This was probably one of my favorite interviews of 2019, and I hope that it is one of your favorite to listen to, dear listeners. Follow us individually on Twitter, soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard, at Rapids96 Podcast for anything that we're doing on Twitter, Rapids96podcast@gmail.com, American Soccer Analysis, and Last Word on Soccer for any of our coverage. Head on over to denverpost.com/HTHL, and then, of course, our Bonfire page and patreon.com/Rapids96podcast if you believe we bring monetary value to our lives. With that, here's myself and Cole Bassett. We'll see you next week, folks.
Peace.
Cole, take me back to the beginning. What's your first memory of a soccer ball?
I grew up in the foothills, so about 20 minutes in the mountains, and it's in our neighborhood. We actually had just a really bad grass field. I've watched videos back, but it was this little field right by our fire station, and we played 4v4s there. So that's okay. What I remember. That's where I started out when I was 4 years old. Started on a 4v4 rec team.
Okay.
And it was with a lot of friends that I still know today, actually.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. You know, are they, what are you, yeah, guys hanging out in the off season or?
Yeah, one of them's actually on the Mines for soccer.
Okay.
So he turned out good, and then one, the girl, she's going to Alabama for soccer as well. So there's a couple of good people that came out of that group.
Okay.
And then the rest are, I don't know where they are at, but I know of them. And
a little soccer hotbed right next to the fire station.
I mean, I'd say Evergreen. We've had Sam Hamilton came out of there, Griffin Dorsey with Toronto FC, and then me, and then we have a couple, Griffin's younger brother, Logan Dorsey, coming up out of the academy, this Rapids Academy, so got a couple.
Okay. When did you actually start organized 11v11?
I believe that was U11 year. I moved, I used to play for Stingers, which is a club up there, local, and then I moved down here to Rush when I was about 8, so I played U8 to U11 and AB8. And then U11, I started playing 11v11, and I made the competitive top team for Rush.
When did the Rapids DA become a possibility, and how did that end up happening?
My coach, Eric Boucher, who I had at Rush from U14 to U16, but I had him for 3 years while I was there, he moved over to Rapids in the wintertime. So I finished out my season with the Rush, my U16, my first U16 year. And then over the summer, right after, the day after I got back from playoffs, I came right here, and the next day I signed for the Rapids Academy.
Okay, yeah. Very cool. Did you have any communication with Crookham on that, or was it all your coach?
It was mostly Eric. Crookham talked to me after I signed, but he didn't have my number, and Eric, I've been close with him for a while, so he was kind of the one that facilitated it, and he was going to be my coach here as well.
It interests me how much things are changing in time in terms of youth development. You know, you go back 5 years ago, you know, FC Dallas and New York Red Bulls kind of knew what they were doing, and 10 years ago, you know, it was, you know, borderline the dark ages compared to what we know now. You and some of the other homegrowns are in a unique position where the academy that you entered isn't necessarily the academy you left to sign with the first team. How did that change, and how did that impact your development as a player?
I think what I've already seen is, and I'm glad that I got to go through the part that was, I consider a very good part in the academy. When I was there, it was always the top players were in each age group. So our best U14 players were at our U14, our best U16s were at U16, our best U18s were at U18. And then that kind of pushed, and it kind of made like the top two or three from each team start to move up. And that was good. Whereas now I'm starting to notice like there's so many young kids playing on our 18s, which is good for their development as well, which we're pushing kids to play at older ages now. But I liked the way that ours was set up a little bit better, because now it's kind of changed. There's so many young kids playing up, whereas when I was playing, it was kind of you're with your age group, and if you're one of the top two or three and you earn it throughout the season, you get to move up in age, and I think that helped me a lot.
Yeah, that's kind of a perfect segue. There's also, you know, if I look at the New York Red Bulls, they're all about just getting minutes. And so obviously they had everything, you know, they sign a homegrown, they immediately get stashed with Red Bulls too. And FC Dallas, more so under Pareja, I know they're figuring things out as well, was more, you know, with Kellen Acosta, for example, was let me just sign him at 16 and just get him in with the first team. And the Rapids have been a little bit more piecemeal, where, you know, where Sam Vines needed to go to Charlotte for a year, you immediately walked into and were training with the first team, probably took some lumps before you got settled in. And then this year, what do you make of maybe that dichotomy, and why was it critical for you to be with professionals as early as possible?
I think once last year at least, or the year before when I was at Rush, I was dominating games, but I wasn't being prolific with like production wise. I think I only had like 3 goals and 6 assists, and like I like to keep track of that stuff, so I wasn't doing that well, and our team finished bottom, so I wasn't happy. But when I came to Rapids last year for the academy, I had like 12 goals and 12 assists or something like that. And it just became to a point where it was like too easy to get shots off, like so much time on the ball, so much space. So that's when I was glad that Porig moved me up to the 19s. At the time, I actually wasn't happy because the coach that we had at the 19s, he's not here anymore. He got fired, but he was kind of crazy. And it was like I got taken out in like the 60th minute every game. I didn't think I was getting enough minutes that I need to be, but it actually helped me a lot playing against better players, because then once I went in there, I started figuring out how much space I had. And then once I went to the U23 PDL team, it started helping me get ready for the first team. And then once I came to the first team, it still took like a month or so until I made my debut from when I signed. I think it was just under a month. Mm-hmm. So it took about a month to get ready to play at an MLS level, but I think once I got in it, like towards the end of the season, once we knew that we weren't in the playoffs and I got a run of games in, that helped me a ton because it made me super confident.
Mm-hmm. And then I guess it also matters, you know, not in a bad way, so to speak, but there's a lot of people within the club who immediately just wanted to give you a pat on the back for being a teenager signing for the club. And somewhere in the Freudian subcontext of Tim Howard, he's like, this kid, like, we need to get him, like, he's got to get shipped into shape. You know, like, how much of that was just a learning curve of you go from being one of the more dominant youth players to, you know, Tim Howard's going to tell you where to put it if you're not good enough.
Yeah, I mean, when I first came in, I thought, like, I told the coaches straight up in this offseason that even though they were hard on me last year, I didn't think they were hard enough. I felt like I was being babied, like you said, like I was a young kid, and there wasn't many young kids that had came in and played right away, in the Rapids at least, so everybody was kind of just shocked. But I personally, I want to be pushed, and I'm not. A lot of my performances this year, even though a lot of people, like, for my age, I think I've played the most in the whole MLS for 01, but I'm not satisfied with some of my performances, and I want to keep getting pushed. So I told the coaches in the offseason I want to be treated just like a Kellen, just like a Tim, like a veteran on this team, because that's what's going to ultimately make me better and earn a starting spot here, and then get eventually to my goals of going to Europe, because that level's the top.
Mm-hmm. What's the best advice you've gotten this year from veteran or coaching staff or anybody else?
With Kellen, it's mostly, I've been talking to Kellen a lot, because I really like his game when he's driving the team forward, and he's our secondary captain as well. Mm-hmm. So him and Tim, I've been talking to them, and it's just be confident. It's kind of like, listen to what the veterans are saying, but you also kind of got to take it to yourself and play your own game, kind of, because if you listen too much to what they're saying, then your head goes away and you're not playing your own game. But you just got to stay confident and believe in yourself and take the pieces that they're giving to you and then learn from them, but you also gotta know what you're best at and keep doing it. So if I dribble and lose a ball, like there was a time in New York City where I dribbled through the middle and I lost the ball and they went down the other end and almost scored. Tim gave me a yelling, like he screamed at me, but then it also helps that one play to set up Sebi's goal. Like I cut back on a guy and played through ball to Johnny.
Yeah.
So it's gonna be on and off. I gotta keep trying things, and if I'm not making mistakes, then I'm never gonna learn. So I gotta keep going and like keep trying to dribble and keep trying to play one touch, two touch, as fast as I can, and ultimately that's going to make me the best center mid that I want to be, because you have to be so clean on the ball and you have to be so confident on it that nobody can take it off you, and that's what I'm trying to get to.
You've mentioned Tim and Kai in the past, and then now Kellen, you know, are those your main mentors on the team? You know, what are those relationships like?
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly Kai talks to me a lot, like almost every day we talk, especially like out of practice today. He's giving me pointers when we go off from the small side. Just he wants me to try to not get touched by anybody, be so quick on the ball that nobody can get near me. Mm-hmm. And it helps my game a lot because physically I'm obviously not one of the bigger guys on the field, even though I'm working in the gym a lot to try to get bigger. But as of right now, I've got to be quicker on the ball so that nobody can get near me. And I talk to him a lot, especially being the 10 underneath him, just having that relationship playing off of him, especially the style that we play, a lot of balls in the Kai and trying to get off of him and play it through to wingers. So having that relationship with him is good. And then Kellen, obviously, he's kind of a position I want to play, like a box-to-box or a 10. It doesn't really matter to me, but a guy that drives the team forward and kind of like a Frank Lampard-esque. So
yeah.
He's kind of got some of those tools that I like. And that's why I try to learn from him, because he's been the national team setup as well, and I want to be there.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of already took away the question, you know, if I want to get people on Rapids Twitter bantering, it's, you know, what's the best position for Cole Bassett? You say you don't really care. Do you have one that maybe you're working on, or, you know, what's, you know, 8, 6, 10, somewhere in between?
Right now it's just, I'll take any of them just to get on the field because I want as many minutes as possible. But for me, I like when there's a 6 underneath and then there's 2 8s kind of just flat, and we're kind of just free to move, where I can join forward, because I like being the late runner into the box. But I also like, the thing that I like more about the 10 is I really like pressing. So that's, I feel like that's one of my strengths.
Mm-hmm.
And being higher up the field, being able to affect center backs is what I like. So especially being at the 10, so far I've liked that more this season. So in the formation that we're playing, I'd rather play the 10.
Yeah.
But overall, if it's more of a 1-6 and two guys in front of him, I think the 8 suits me more, just with my legs, and I can get box to box. But either of them, I don't.
Yeah, mind. And so those positions aren't too dissimilar. Like, there's a lot of overlap between what an 8 does and what a 10 does. You know, you mentioned the pressing. You know, how much of that, from a skill set standpoint, are you trying to just, you know, add to your utility belt?
Yeah, I mean, because if I can play any of the positions, obviously I'm next on the depth chart to go in. If I mean, right now, last week, Pricey and Kel had a great game, and so did Diego, but if one of them gets hurt, if I'm really good at distributing the ball and being a hard tackler in the middle, I can go straight in for Pricey at the sixth. And it doesn't matter which position I play, because last year versus Dallas, I was playing the sixth, and I got up into the attack and scored. So either one of the three, I really don't care right mm-hmm. now, but in the future, I definitely want to try to be more of the attacking side. But I think the biggest part of my game that I have to work on is the defensive side. And I think a lot of people can see that just the way I've gotten the tackles. I've been too high and not strong enough. Mm-hmm. And I've looked at my stats. I've lost a fair amount of duels and 1v1 tackles. So that's definitely a part of my game that I'm really trying to work on.
Okay. Let's say 10 years from now, Cole Bassett's the captain of Arsenal winning Champions League. What position is he playing?
I think I'm playing in... I don't know if they're going to keep the same formation or not because they're 4-4-2. But that more advanced 8, kind of like Danny Ceballos this year.
Okay.
Kind of like that, like a creator. I still need to work on my creativity. I still have a ton of stuff to work on, but my creativity, kind of like Danny Ceballos, being kind of like the artist on the field is what he described it when he mm-hmm. came to Arsenal. Is kind of like the guy that loves to pick out passes and be a playmaker and create, but also get on the end of things.
How was the homegrown game last week, you know, and then obviously happy birthday. Congrats on being legal.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. But yeah, the homegrown game was really good. We had a really good group of players down there. And there was a lot of guys that I've played against coming up in the youth from Kansas City, Dallas, Houston, even some Salt Lake guys as well. But like our midfield was probably, if you have a dream midfield as a young kid, that MLS midfield that we had was pretty good. Cervania, Roberts, me, and Aronson. Mm-hmm. That was a pretty solid midfield right there. And we dictated tempo pretty well. There was a period where we lost the ball a bit halfway through the second half, but mm-hmm. for the most part, we did well, and it was really fun playing with them.
Okay, did you get to celebrate your birthday at all? Did Sam take you out for dinner or anything?
We had to wake up at 6 a.m. in San Jose, drive to San Francisco, take a 5.5-hour flight down to Orlando, and then we got to Orlando, and we didn't get the training on time, but we just ate dinner and went to sleep because we were so tired. Mm-hmm. So my birthday wasn't like that fun. I didn't really do anything. But the next day when we had training appearances, and then I got to go on Digital HQ on the MLS Twitter with mm-hmm. Stephen Keel, and they gave me a birthday cake on there.
Okay.
So I got to celebrate a bit that day.
Okay, that's cool. You scored the game-winning PK. Not asking about your own approach or to give away if you have a favorite corner. Is that similar to some of the stuff we were talking about in the run of play? Are PKs or your approach to set pieces, especially in training day, is that something you're working on as well?
Yeah, I mean, Pricey was great on the weekend. It's hard to take him off when he has 3 assists, but
yeah.
When he was out of the lineup a bit injured, I was the guy who stepped up. And I want to, in the academy, I was the guy on set pieces all the time, and PKs as well, free kicks, everything. So I want to try to be the guy for our first team, especially Kai's got pens right now. I don't think I'm going to take that off of him, but our shooting free kicks, we haven't scored one yet this year, so I want to be the one when I get on the field to take it, because I haven't got to take one yet this year, so I'm just trying to work on it to earn respect of the other guys so that once we step on the field, they'll let me take one.
All right, we'll see. Yeah. Speaking of the homegrown movement as well, you know, obviously there's a lot of hype with the teenagers, and, you know, the Tyler Adamses of the world and young guys like you, Gianluca Busio, for example, in Sporting Kansas City. So there's a new generation all around the league, and in that there's a lot of expectations on you on behalf of the academy, on behalf of the club. But on the plus side, you've got Brian Crookham. You've talked about mentorship on the first team as well. So you've got expectations, but you have a village around you to help you make it happen. And then also you've got Sam Vines and Seb who are going through the same thing. What's that dynamic of expectations versus a support structure like?
Yeah, I mean, I try not to think too much about expectations that other people have on me, because ultimately it's what the expectations that I put on myself that matter to me the most. Because I know where I want to be in the future. And like you said, captain of Arsenal, that is definitely a long-term goal for me. But I got to look at the expectations that I have of myself. And it's nicer this year because last year I was the only young kid in the locker room. I think the closest age was like 23, and I was 17 at the time. Mm-hmm. I think it was Nicky Jackson or Courtney, one of those two, because the rest were on loan. So like, I didn't have Sammy Vines or even Richie Perez here.
Mm-hmm.
And now this year I got Sammy and Seb kind of alongside me. So it takes a bit of pressure off of you, I feel like, because last year, especially on social media, people hype you up a lot. And personally, I would rather be the guy that's kind of coming out of nowhere, which I feel like a lot of people have seen. And that's what like guys like Bobby Warshaw have said that he kind of came out of nowhere. And mm-hmm. I like that. I kind of like the guy that continues to work hard and does all the work in the background and nobody really sees it, and then try to perform on the field.
Not checking your mentions is probably a really healthy life as well. Then, I mean, Twitter is a...
Yeah, it can be a disgusting world sometimes. When I was first signed, I like they were like, look up your name, and I was like, all right. So you look it up. And last year, there wasn't that much bad stuff, but like you get tagged in a couple of things if you have a bad performance. But that's kind of what makes you better. Like when mm-hmm. you have critics that go against you and say you had a bad game, you just kind of got to take that to heart and be like, yeah, I mean, it's true. I got to perform the next week. And I kind of like that. Same with... I think Courtney, he had a tweet the other week.
Kai's coming out with fisticuffs anytime as well, but that's his personality, and maybe that works for him, but not for other people.
Like, I wouldn't respond on Twitter and say, oh, yeah, I'm going to prove you wrong, but, like, I definitely just want to be a guy that continues to stay humble and work as hard as I can, because I like to be known as the hardest worker, and you can probably ask any guy in the locker room, and they'll say that I'm the first one and last one out, and I like to work the hardest, and I'm going to continue that until... to the end of my career, and I reach my goals.
Okay, rapid fire. I know you got to get to shower and probably hobbies off the field. What do you like to do during an off day?
I like golf. Me and Sammy Vines have started to pick it up. I really enjoy that. And then probably just chilling with my family. I don't know how much time I have left with them staying at the household, whether it be moving out or going to Europe eventually. So I like to spend as much time with them as possible.
Expectations for Arsenal this year, top four maybe?
I'm hoping so. I think the Pepe signing boosts us into the top four. Just above Chelsea is going Man City, Liverpool, Spurs, Arsenal.
Okay, you heard it here first. Favorite player to watch, past or present?
Kevin De Bruyne. He is absurd on the ball. The guy, the way that he passes, like in the preseason when they were in the Asia Tour, some of his passes, I mean, I know those teams weren't as good, but he was picking passes out of nowhere. And he also scores almost, I'd say, every three games. So he's got a really good production rate. And I tried to mimic that in the academy. He had 12 goals and 24 assists, and I had 12 goals and 12 assists. So I was a little bit off on the assists-wise, but I'm definitely trying to get to his production level one day and kind of be the workhorse that he is.
Okay, give me one hilarious PG-rated Tim Howard story. Or you can just censor it if that would suffice.
There's so many. He's definitely a funny guy. Like, you wouldn't think about it, like, because he's pretty quiet and he's a humble guy when you go and talk to him. But in the locker room, he's a pretty funny guy. I haven't got to hang around him too much, though. But, like...
Just, like, witty banter and stuff like that?
Yeah, it's a lot of that. Like, because he was in Britain for so long. So he's got, like, him and Jack Price and Sam Nicholson, they're always making jokes. And a lot of stuff's not PG-rated that they joke it off. But I'd say, like, one of my memories of Tim is last year in San Jose after our last away game. Anthony let us go out, and he took me out to dinner with him, Kellen, and Giles Barnes, and we just went around the mall, and it's crazy how many people come up to him, and he's just joking, he's just struggling around, like, you gonna see this? And I'm like, yeah, one day, but it was probably every 5 minutes that somebody came up to him and asked for pictures.
Cole, you're an old head on young shoulders, and the Rapids are lucky that you did not grow up in Utah. Thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, man.